Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Chris Evans here. A big thank you for downloading our Virgin Radio podcast. Coming up on this week's edition of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky, Ramesh Ranganathan tells us about his mum and wife going toe-to-toe about who cooks him the better food. Astronaut David Mackay is here, the first ever Scot to visit space. Bryony Gordon has some excellent advice for teenage girls. Matt Roberts and Dr. Anita Sternum check myself and Vassas' testosterone live on the air. Plus loads more great guests. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy.
Our next guest has gone from being a maths teacher to one of the busiest and most in-demand comedians in the UK. Here to tell us all about his TV shows Ranganathan and Judge Ramesh and his massive stand-up tour, The Cynics Mixtape, please welcome the chronic underachiever that is Ramesh Ranganathan.
Hi, Ramesh.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. Vassas has a question for Ramesh.
So Judge Ramesh.
Yeah.
Series 2, episode 1 of 12.
Do you have a gavel? Do you have a gavel, by the way, when you make it?
Yes, and I've been told that that's really bad.
Okay. Wednesday the 22nd of May, 10 p.m. So in Judge Ramesh, Ramesh presides over genuine court cases brought before him by the public and serves up his own style of sweet justice. The new series has everyone from a sword swallower trying to resolve his issues with a fire juggler to his own mum and wife arguing over whose cooking he prefers.
Are you insane? Have you gone mad?
I didn't know it was going to happen. So
It was sprung upon you?
It was sprung upon me, yeah. So my mum and my wife turned up, and basically what had happened was I'd been... My mum had been sending Sri Lankan food care packages to my house. and my wife was getting really annoyed about it. And so,
Why?
Because she had been, like, she's cooked dinner, and then suddenly I'd turn up with this, you know, my mum would turn up, or I'd have this carrier bag full of stuff. It's a bit of conflict, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so they brought it to the courtroom, but it went badly. It went pretty badly, I'm not going to lie to you.
How could it not have gone any other way, for heaven's sake? What were you thinking it might have? How could it have gone other than... You idiot!
I know. I didn't. I sort of, as they arrived, I thought, oh, well, this is bad. I mean, this is bad. And so it proved to be. I didn't save it, put it
okay,
that
well,
way.
Okay, well, give us, because it's a fascinating. Well done, Vassas, for picking up on this, by the way. So, I mean, it must have started bad and just got worse.
Well, what happened was, is that originally my wife was bringing my mum to court for cooking for me all the time. Right. And then during the court case, they found out. During the course of the discussion, it became apparent that I'd been texting my mum requesting these care packages.
Oh, no! Twist the dagger, why don't you? Or at least the bread knife.
And so that is... That's...
Oh, no wonder you took it to Shooting Glen. I hope you're staying in a treehouse. This explains so much now. I sense I've just spoken the truth.
Yes, that was. It took a turn for the worse at that stage.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and then I became the defendant.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you're always going to be the defendant.
Yes, I know.
The accused, the defendant.
Yeah.
So how on earth did this unravel in the wash, if it ever unraveled at all?
Well, it's still a... I would describe it as an ongoing issue.
I'm actually sweating on your behalf. God. I mean, obviously, your mum is so much a better cook than your wife. I mean, that goes... I'm reading between the lines here.
No.
Why would you be requesting things from your mum secretly by text?
Because they specialise in different areas, you know?
Yeah, one cooks and the other one prepares food in the kitchen that nobody wants to eat. Is that right?
What are you doing to me, man? I don't want to go to Chitting Glen again. Basically, my wife doesn't make Sri Lankan... So I was requesting Sri Lankan cuisine, basically.
Right, from your mum, who is Sri Lankan.
Yes, and my wife is not Sri Lankan.
That's a bit unfair. That's like asking, who's the best darts player in the world?
Phil the Power Taylor
to take on John McEnroe at Wimbledon circa 1982.
Yeah, I didn't ask them to do a Sri Lankan cuisine cook-off. I it was just that...
You didn't ask them to, but it was in the air, wasn't it? Well, what did you... What on earth can your wife put up against the food of your childhood?
Yes, I know.
From the continent of your heritage.
Yes, it's difficult.
So what did she put up against the poor woman?
It was fajitas versus an aubergine curry in a head-to-head. All right. And they were both delightful.
Shut up. Oh, that's all right then. Okay. Peace achieved. They were both delightful. Oh, when was this?
This was a couple of months ago.
This explains why you're going on this massive tour. You just don't want to be at home. The Cynics Mixtape Tour,
yes.
2019-2020. How many dates are you playing? Oh, my God, there are so many dates
here. Well, that's the first leg. I don't know, actually.
So many curries to be had.
Basically away from September the 11th this year to this time next year.
Yeah, essentially.
So that's 67 takeaways.
Yes.
Packages.
Yeah. No, I'm not getting any... Chris, I don't know what... you initially discovered this had happened. You said I feel bad for you, and now you're properly putting the boot in. I don't understand why you've taken this strategy.
I don't mean to put the boot in. I can only apologise. Okay, you deserve all the sympathy the world has to offer, obviously.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Being a teenage girl is very, very hard. The emotions, unrequited first loves, everything seems impossible. Well, our next guest has some advice for you. Please welcome someone that made it through their teenage years with plenty of stories to tell, the brilliant journalist and author of You Got This, Bryony Gordon.
Morning, Bryony.
Oh, morning.
Welcome.
That was lovely.
Welcome to the show. Now, mums, grandmums, and young mums, any teenage girls who may be off school for one reason or another, you have to listen to Bryony Gordon, then you have to buy a book, and then the government have to listen, then they have to buy books, Bryony's books, forever, for all teenage girls forever. It's that simple. This book is amazing, Bryony.
Thank you.
It really is. This is a Bible. This is what
it's wow. Well, it's like my own, but it's all the things I wish someone had told me at 12 that I'm only really finding out now at 38, and all the things that I've learned like since I came out about my own mental health stuff in the press about 6 years ago. And I've been really privileged to accidentally get into this sort of mental health community. And I was like, I need to distill everything that I have learned into a book, also because I've got a daughter and I don't want her to grow up experiencing the same sort of insecurities that I have. Mm. Women, I really feel, and I think it's also similar with men, but I think girls feel they have this obligation to pick out bits of their bodies and their cells that they don't like. And they, you know, we're told to keep quiet about periods, and there's so much shame at the very core of our bodies. And I'm just done with it. I was like, I don't want this to be the way my daughter grows up. I don't want her to be thinking that she has to hate on herself and trash talk herself. Because at the heart of every bad decision I've ever made, and I've made a lot, was having zero self-esteem, you know, or low self-esteem. And at the heart of every good decision I make, which is staying sober because I'm in recovery, and is having like as having a sense of self-worth, you know. And we're not taught to like ourselves. It's sort of like when I was a teenager growing up, if someone loved themselves, that was not a good thing. They were up themselves, arrogant, that kind of thing.
Your eyes seem brighter. You seem lighter. You ran the marathon, of course, twice. Not once, but twice.
Yeah.
But yet you weren't over all this then, were you?
The first marathon I did, I was not. Like, I stopped drinking for the duration of the running the marathon.
Which was in 2017.
Yeah. I did it. I thought it was one of the things where I thought, if I turn up to do a marathon, I'm gonna beat my demons finally. And I didn't. And in fact, afterwards, that was one of the moments where I knew I had to sort my bleep out.
Because you crashed again, didn't you?
Yeah.
After the marathon, which is so bizarre.
And I went
it's so bizarre that you did that.
It's not bizarre.
Sorry, no, I didn't mean
really Well, ever. No, but I know, but the narratives that we like kind of beginnings, middles, ends, happy endings. And actually what it did was it taught me so much about myself. Yeah. And it showed me another way, which was to not, I had one way, which was drinking and getting out of my head. And then I'd sort of learnt this other way. I was doing it for Heads Together. Of making myself high and happy without having to go to a pub. And I crashed and burnt and went to rehab and decided to choose the better way.
Because even running a marathon is easier than facing your demons.
Well, I said, I remember when I did it, people were like, you know, it's really hard running a marathon. I was like, I think that's why people do it. Like, you know, obviously it's hard, you know, 26.2 miles. But I always say, running a marathon, I remember at like mile 21 thinking, will there ever be a time I am not running this marathon?
Yeah.
And I remember then people like shout your name and they give you Haribo. And I was like, buck up, Gordon. This, you have been through a lot worse than this. Marathon running is hard, but it's no harder than the days when you can't get out of bed at all.
If you can't get to where you need to go to buy this book, now while you're waiting, go to YouTube, by the way, Karen listening to us, and watch this video of the late great poet and author Maya Angelou, because I've not seen this. Tell us about that.
Oh God, about what love is.
Yeah.
It's really powerful, because when I grew up I thought love was all these sort of unhelpful things, like I thought it was sort of the kind of explosive, like it was going to happen in a flash. And Maya Angelou, she does this absolutely beautiful thing about love is saying to you, I love you, I can't be there for you, but I'm here for you. And it's about supporting. I'm not going to do it any justice, but go and find it, because it is the most incredibly moving thing that completely transformed all my sort of unhealthy goals in my life, where I sit and still berate my husband because he's not come home with a massive bunch of flowers, yeah, and told me I'm beautiful.
Or a unicorn.
But he
damn those fairy tales.
But do you know what my husband does do? Is he supports me. He lets me get on with doing my things. He tells me I'm doing a good job. When I'm having a meltdown, which is frequent, he doesn't tell me not to. He just says, you're going to be okay, babes. And that's what love is. But, you know, I had so many different notions of what I thought that when I met Mr. Right, you know, everything would sort out. You know, I'm like, oh, I've got a bugaboo and a baby and a flat and Clapham. Look at me. And then I have another breakdown and end up in rehab. And like, what I have really learned is that what I say to teenage girls in this book is, you were Miss Right. You don't need anyone else. Like, relationships are lovely and they're great, but they are only part of you. They are never all of you, and you should never let them be all
of you. And also, if something can bring you happiness, it can take it away. So you're going to go around schools in Great Britain talking to girls about this book. You've come up with a talk to do with this book.
If you want me to come to your school and talk to you, or you want me to come to your kid's school, just like come and get me on Instagram.
Okay. What's your Instagram?
At Bryony Gordon.
At Bryony Gordon. Okay, you need to do a nationwide tour. It needs to be backed by the Education Authority, and you need to go around schools and you need to take an army of girls with you, and you need to teach them the talk so the talk can be talked forever. That's what I think.
I love you.
We love you. We really
do.
We're
quite enthused about your book.
I'm blown away.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Over to Vassos now. Vassos, because you're in charge of what's going on next, and you're welcome to it.
I say I'm in charge, or you say I'm in charge. I'm going to say Matt Roberts is in charge.
Hi, Matt.
Britain's top personal trainer. You may have heard him on the show last week with his new book called Younger, Fitter, Stronger, the revolutionary 8-week fitness plan for men. Now, you came in brandishing your book, Matt.
I did.
And then, and this book is basically aimed at people like me and Chris, people in their 40s and 50s and beyond, who can look and feel as good as they did, you said, in their 20s and 30s. And the way you're going to measure it is by testing our testosterone now.
Right now.
And then again in 8 weeks. Is that right?
Exactly that. So basically, we said last week about the fact that, you know, these levels diminish over time, which is a worrying thing for any guy of the age. Don't look so nervous. It's going to be fine. So we said we've got to make sure we know where you are. Without knowing where you are, how do you know where you're going to go to? Mm. So the way to do that is make sure we can draw a small amount of blood. Only a pint or two. That's all. Nothing much. And we're going to check out all the key characteristics.
Are you qualified to do blood tests, Matt?
Me personally, I actually am, but it's not me today. I've got the very glamorous, beautiful Anita Sternum with me from Neuris, who's going to be drawing your blood.
Good morning, Dr. Anita.
Good morning.
We're putting this off, aren't we?
Delaying anymore.
I forgot what we're talking about. Sorry, who is she again? Still putting it off, aren't we?
Yes, you are. Wow. Would you like me to take your blood?
Go on then.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. Do you know the bit I don't like about blood tests or blood pressure tests? It's when they wrap the thing around your arm. Is that what it's called? The tourniquet.
This is the tourniquet. Okay. It's like an elastic band.
Now your outfit today matches your tourniquet. Well, you did that on purpose, didn't you?
I tried to dress appropriately.
Okay,
as well.
You did. All right.
So
okay.
I need your arm this way.
Oh, and God. Is it always the left arm?
Well, we like to choose your non-dominant arm, ideally, right, but okay. Your other arm's too far away from me, so I'm not going to be able to. access them.
Right, okay.
So I want you to pump your hands.
I'm not very veiny, am I?
You're not, no.
It's bizarre because I've got terrible, terrible varicose veins, but you can barely find a vein in my forearm.
So you're a difficult patient for me then.
Sorry,
I'm stand on your head. Your veins get the blood to your head.
Is that a part of our 8-week regime?
It might well be,
oh,
actually.
No. No.
I'll hang you upside down. So what you're going to do over the 8 weeks, now imagine what's going to happen is we're going to find your results,
yep.
And in about a week's time, come back, tell you what you actually are. She's trying to find some blood there somewhere.
And
based on what we do find,
yes.
If you're fine and healthy and good, well, that's great. That's fantastic. You can carry on. We might
case.
Not be. If it isn't, then we're going to make sure we give you a training program that's going to boost
she's
it up.
She's had to go to the other arm. She can't find the vein in my left arm. Is it because they've all gone down to my legs?
You're a bit dehydrated today, actually.
Am I?
Oh, that's the extra bit.
I've had about 15... Really?
Under the weather. So we're getting some life in the arm now. I'm having to tap your arm to get your veins to come.
Yeah, that's a like.
That's
strength.
More than a tap, by the way, Doctor.
We heard that tap.
I'm feeling quite... I've got a dead arm.
I've seen club before.
I just need your arm nice and straight.
I can't look.
I know, it's the thing. It's the thing. It's the nice perfectly unbroken skin.
Is it in yet?
No, is this stage fright, basically?
Oh, God, is it in now?
You've got the tiniest veins
oh,
ever.
No. Oh, sorry. But is it in yet?
Okay, so it's going in now.
Ow, ow. Oh, ow! Oh, wow, wow, wow.
Take
ow,
a deep
ow.
Breath.
You're what? Being really brave.
Take a deep breath.
We have struck gold.
On, do I get a cookie and some milk?
I've been good at the doctor stickers, which you can have.
All right.
Today.
Thank you, Dr. Vicky. So, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Anita, sorry, Anita.
That's
good.
Okay.
I'm going all.
You can call me Dr. Vicky if you like.
Going
you
woozy. Who's Dr. Vicky?
Arm,
who's
so
Dr. Vicky?
So we're nearly done. Your blood's quite dark, so you do look a bit dehydrated. So, as you know, alcohol is a diuretic, so it's probably being in the sun and drinking alcohol is probably...
I only had one pint by accident.
Fluid levels a bit.
And I'm like,
so you're keeping going with this accidental thing, aren't you?
I thought I'd
go
into Matt's fitness plan. He'll
I
be
feel
able
very
to guide you on your hydration.
I feel very put upon levels. Here, okay, to be honest. So, Vassos is going under the knife now. He'll be out for about 8 hours.
I said to Dr. Anita, don't worry, I'm not going to be such a baby. And then I suddenly realised, I actually am.
Don't worry, I'll be gentle with you too.
So it's funny, so my blood is very dark, which means I'm probably quite more
dehydrated
than I thought. And yeah. I thought, you know, during the show I'll drink like eight or nine cups of herbal tea with honey in.
But it might be going in then going straight out again.
Oh, it definitely does that as well.
Yeah, it's got to hang on to it a bit longer. It's going to change your diet very slightly to make sure you hang on to the water in the cells rather than just around the cells and
so
going through
you. So have more fibre.
Probably more fibre into the diet, almost certainly. We're going to check that out as well to make sure you can hang on to it because it's water soluble.
That's what it
so
is.
So it stays in the gut for longer and it gets into your cells more readily.
Yeah,
so we'll try a bit of that as a change. And then looking at how you rehydrate after you do your long runs, after you're running, when you're sweating like crazy, the potassium has a system as well to make sure that you get that back in the system straight after the first half an hour and then rehydrate you well. It could be as well before you run, doing a bit of a water push before you run, having a good half a litre before you run to kind of really get the fluids in, retain them for a bit longer in the run rather than all coming out of your system.
Right.
So we'll just try and tweak you a bit to make sure you hang on to more water where it should be and make you feel better.
And by the way,
a better colour.
My veins are amazing compared to Chris's.
Boy, it's not competitive.
No, to be honest. No, you had to look on the other arm, didn't you, Dutch Amy?
You have veins that you can't see. You have to feel for them. They're deep.
They're like Zen
but
veins.
They're also quite empty.
They're beyond
today.
Sight.
They're dehydrated veins.
Yeah, all right. You said that once or
but
twice.
But when
or three
I come back and
what?
Take it again. I should see
different story.
Veins. Exactly.
Different story.
They're just resting.
Watership down. All right, so is Vassos done now?
He's done.
Is his blood a better colour, would you
He's
say?
He's also quite dehydrated.
Hey! Come on, brother!
The dehydration brothers.
Yeah, yeah. No problem.
But he has got good veins.
You're all right. Oh, wow!
Great.
Vassos is darker than mine.
I've got black blood.
What happened there?
Maybe black is the new
it's like
red.
It's Star Trek.
Can I have a look at Vassos compared to mine, Dr. Amy, please? Don't. Amy, Vicky, Anita, what is wrong with me? One blood test and I'm all over the place.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
So that's three guests down and still loads to come. Still to come. Will Williams tells us about sound meditation. Jared Harris and Emily Watson chat the haunting new series Chernobyl. Rocket Salad Ronnie O'Sullivan telling us about his unlikely new project, a brand new cookbook. All that and more, but first, Dapper Dave, who's next?
She's starred
in sitcoms, trodden the boards in King Lear, and even shared a snog with Lily James in Mamma Mia 2. And that's only in the last couple of years. Here to tell us about A Nice Cup of Tea, the third installment of her best-selling novel set in the French Riviera, please say bonjour, madame, to Celia Imrie.
Morning, Celia.
Good morning.
Right, Celia, A Nice Cup of Tea is what your book's called. It's the third installment of a story. Mm. And now I said to you yesterday, I said, I haven't read it. You don't need to, don't worry, it's fine. Mm. Okay, so bring us up to speed then.
Well, it's really a niece cup of tea because the first book was called Not Quite Niece, you see. So it goes on like that. And niece work, if you can get it. But it's a group of people who've decided to live in the most beautiful place in the world, I think. I have great fun making them do the worst things that I can think up and then the best things that I can think up.
For example, can you talk about them on the radio at this time in the morning?
Yes, well, they've decided to open a restaurant. And not that
that's
I...
That's one of the worst things you can do, yeah. Tom.
Well, exactly.
And what do they want to do that for?
And they get into the most terrible trouble. But it's sort of quite theatrical, I suppose, opening a restaurant. I can see the theatre in it. And I don't really know very much about it. But they do. They get into terrible trouble. They get, you know, everything goes wrong. And then one of my characters is an ex-actress and she gets tempted back into being in a film. So it's a bit of a roller coaster because things go terribly wrong and then in the end, all good.
How well do you know the Riviera?
Well, I know because I go on the train from Paris right along the coast, and the last hour is absolutely magnificent from Marseille all along the coast. So the place that I write about is a sort of made up little tiny village that is on the coast.
Is it an amalgamation of villages that you know well?
Exactly.
Mondelieu, would that be part of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of that going on. Yes. Yeah, good. And when was the first time you went to the Riviera? Because everybody used to go there all the time, didn't they?
I know. Well, you can... I'm not surprised. I mean, I begin my day off with a swim in the sea, you see.
Because do you live there?
Well, I've got a place where I escape to.
How cool is it to have a place there?
It's so cool. And I look out onto the Mediterranean every morning.
And you go for a swim every single morning you're there?
Well, I do once the lifeguards are there, because they're rather handsome. So I wait until they're in position.
Yeah, handsome and handy.
Exactly.
That's good. Because David Niven famously lived there, didn't he, in Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat?
I passed his house just the other day.
And it's got its own harbour. Can you imagine having a house, A, in Cap-Ferrat, Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, B, with its own harbour? Mm. What the heck is that about?
With you as well. It is just the most, everywhere, away from the sea as well, with the vineyards and the lavender, it's just the most beautiful place in the world.
It really
we're going
is.
Next week, and you tell us where we're going to buy our new shoes.
You these shoes, Chris, because they're very sparkly shoes, which people rather like.
I like them.
But you have to go to Monte Carlo to get them.
Which is handy.
You have to go to Monte Carlo.
But since you're going there next week.
Now, what's the difference between Monte Carlo and Monaco? Because Monaco's so small and Monte Carlo's in Monaco. What's the difference?
Yes. Actually, even though the whole place is so naturally beautiful, I think Monte Carlo or Monaco, wherever you call it, is not so pretty. It's very, very built up. And people are, well, I'll probably get into trouble, but they're very rich, but they're very miserable.
Well, they're not all miserable, are they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, a comb costs £999.
That'd make you miserable, wouldn't it? That would pretty much make you miserable.
But, you know, and I don't think I would like to live there.
Okay, now you've alluded to the fact that you take the train from Paris. You take the train from Paris along the coast. Eventually, you get to Marseille and you carry on going east and eventually you come to Nice and the Croisette, and it's all very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I was asked to ask you a question by somebody we both know. And he said, I hear CD's coming on your show tomorrow. So I said, yes, that's correct. He said, there's only one question you need to ask her. Mm. Celia, the question I was asked to ask you.
Go on.
Was, this chap said, just ask her. Because you're in a big US series, aren't you?
I am. Season 4 coming along.
Okay, that's ongoing and it's a big global hit. Okay.
Yep.
And that's filmed in Los Angeles.
It is.
Okay. And he said, just ask her how she gets to Los Angeles because it's amazing.
What, the way I get there?
Yeah.
Well, the way I get there is I jump onto the Queen Mary 2 in Southampton.
Yeah.
I go across on the ship, the glorious ship, to New York. And then I go across from New York to Los Angeles on the train, 3 days.
This all suggests to me that you don't like flying.
Sort of does.
Wow, what yes. a cool way to go. You are a... I mean, I've always thought you're one of the coolest cats that's come out
really?
Of the bag.
Well,
of course.
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody says that about you anyhow. But you get cooler with it more we find out about you as the layers get stripped off one by one.
Well, my manager said that I'm the most... elegant hustler they'd ever met.
Really?
So that's good.
Celia's book, A Nice Cup of Tea, is the third book in a trilogy. But you don't have to read the first two because Rachel hasn't and she's loving the third.
I know, isn't that good?
Yeah.
No.
Could you buy the third, like it so much you can go back to one and two?
Why not?
Would that make sense?
I think that makes absolute sense.
For
yes.
you, it makes real sense. Okay. Celia, thank you for being here.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Scotland's first astronaut, the Virgin Galactic pilot Dave Mackay, is our sports guest this morning. Thank you for coming into the sports locker, Dave.
Thank you for having me here.
Such a thrill to meet you. And I tell you what, I really wanted to meet you. And I really wanted to talk about this. And I was trying to think of a way to persuade Chris that this has anything to do with sport. And this is what I've come up with. So work with me, please.
I'm intrigued.
OK, we've just had a very exciting title race. And the new space race. So from the title race, Liverpool and Man City, to the space race, because Virgin Galactic, you've got a couple of rivals up there with this is who's going to take commercial passengers into space first. So where are we with this?
We're not really in a race unless we win it, of course. Our last flight was highly successful. We had a person in the back for the first time. So we flew into space and we allowed that person, our chief astronaut instructor, Beth Moses, to unstrap and float around in the cabin and evaluate the customer experience. And that was highly successful. So we've done the full shooting match, if you like. And so now we are installing the full commercial cabin and getting ready for the rest of the test program, followed by commercial flights into space.
What does it look like inside?
At the moment, it's a shell with this new commercial interior being installed, but it's going to have up to six customer seats. I can't give away all of the details of the interior because that's a big reveal to the customers when they first see it, but it's going to look very spacey.
I like spacey, that's cool.
I like spacey.
What did Beth think of a trip?
She loved it. You know, there's a saying in aviation, amongst pilots at least, that the best seats in the house are the pilot seats because they have all the view out front and everything. But actually, on this flight for the first time, I thought that actually she's got the best seat because she was the only person we had back there, and she's got 12 windows back there, and she's allowed to unstrap and experience this amazing sensation of zero G, floating around there upside down, hanging onto the ceiling and doing all sorts of wacky things. So, yeah, she loved it, and she was very impressed.
You, along with absolutely everyone else, when you were a kid, presumably thought I'd like to be an astronaut, but there's only you and Tim Peake basically who've achieved it. How do you become
Helen Sharman?
Helen Sharman.
Yeah, and Helen Sharman. Yeah. How do you become an astronaut?
You work hard, you know, and there's a bit of luck as well. But you know, I had this dream as a kid. You know, I watched the Apollo program as a young kid, and found out that those Apollo astronauts were former military test pilots. So that was my career path. I joined the military, flew in the RAF, became a test pilot, and just tried hard to get into space flying. You know, I applied for the Juno mission back in 1991, but I didn't even get past the first round.
What did you do wrong? What did you get wrong?
I don't know. Maybe I just didn't fill in the application form properly.
Oh,
don't
you
know.
Need to talk to him about that. He forgot to enter
boxes.
The London Marathon.
Yeah. Oh, really? There you go.
Yeah, and he works for them. It was terribly embarrassing.
But, you know, Helen Sharman was a great ambassador for the UK there. She did a great job.
She still does talks, doesn't she? She goes around
doing these
amazing, inspiring talks for school kids.
Absolutely, yeah. She does a great job, yeah. Anyway, I didn't lose heart, but, I eventually came to the conclusion that it wasn't going to happen for somebody in the UK. And so I left the military. I joined Virgin Atlantic. And then, lo and behold, through Virgin Atlantic, got into Virgin Galactic. So,
and when you were up there, when you're up there in space, forget the zero G, what are you seeing? And is what you see, does it change you as much as I think it probably would?
Yeah, I think it, you know, it's, we've all seen pictures of the Earth from space and, you know, you get the black sky and the bright air surface. But in reality, it's much more intense than that. You know, the sky is a very dense matte black, which is might sound a bit odd, but it's really, really black. And one of the things that struck me right from the start of these test flights, when we started going to higher and higher altitudes, is how bright the surface of the Earth is. And so the human eye is able to capture that range of brightness in a way that a camera doesn't seem to be able to do. And then there's this, you know, the atmosphere is just stunningly beautiful. You know, on that last flight, I saw this beautiful band of cyan blue with other pencil thin lines above and below it. Very, very, very thin, you know, it's shockingly thin, really, when you see it. But this beautiful three-dimensional view of this dense black space and this very bright planet surface separated by this beautiful band of the atmosphere. And it's just absolutely stunning. Yeah.
Go on then. While you were up there, while you had this view, what did you choose to do?
yes. Well, we happen to have a couple of Chris's books with us.
You and, are having a laugh.
Yeah, and yeah, they were, you know, whilst we had nothing to do, you can see how well thumbed they are, you know, so...
You actually read them. I you didn't to forget honest. To take it to any toilet tissue with you, did you?
lots of people, as you can see from the state of these books, lots of people have read them. I didn't actually have time to read them in space, I'm afraid, Chris.
Well, so. I can read them too if you want to stick around for a while.
That would be good, actually, yeah.
You can tell he's an astronaut, by the way, because he's got five people with him. And yeah. Astronauts have a minimum of five people with them.
I didn't even notice you were all in here. Yeah.
And he's always got a Union flag on his person just in case he comes across a new planet. Okay, great to talk to you. Great
Thank
to listen
you,
to you.
So I also, just quickly, I also took this. I know you're a petrol head, so I've got a keyring here, which has also been in space for one of your cars.
Because
so
I need
you,
a
you might need that.
No, I there do. I'm going to change my car keys over to this one right now. Lovely to meet you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thanks. Fly safe.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We have another guest, please, now. Up to you, Dapper Dave.
He can pot balls with his right hand. He can pot balls with his left hand. Now he's turned both his hands to the world of cooking with a new recipe book, Top of Your Game. Please welcome 5-time world champion, 7-time UK champion and current world number one. It's the Rocket himself, Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Good morning, Ronnie.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, yeah.
Right, tell us about the journey from the bays to the kitchen, please.
Right, just a quick one. I always had a problem with my weight. I was always a fatty.
Right.
So I kind of used to try and sweat it off in the gym, right. Go running, and it was like for a month I'd be flying and then I'd go back to my old ways. And then I got into the running club when I was about 28, 29, and got into long distance running. And I just lost all this weight and I thought I'd get the running high, I can eat what I like, I can carry on eating loads of food.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was slim, so I thought, happy days.
Yep.
Then I got loads of injuries from running, so couldn't run as much. Then started putting the weight back on, I thought, oh no,
here
I'm going to be like, you know, overweight person. So I always had a problem with my weight and still have, so I'm kind of a bit conscious of not trying to put it on and...
I didn't know any of this.
Yeah.
I always thought on telly, I always thought you looked particularly skinny.
Yeah, because I run so much. So I'd run
that.
40 miles a week and do loads of races. So you needed to put loads of food in. I'd eat all right, but I'd eat so much of it. I mean, I stayed with my mate for 5 days. And in the end, he said I was sick with trying to keep up with the amount of food you eat.
Right.
Because I was burning it off. I was running 6 miles every morning in the gym.
Yeah.
And he was just thinking, well, I'll eat when Ronnie eats.
Okay.
And he nearly... Oh, his guts were like in bits.
So then you met a nutritionist.
Yeah.
Who's like the genie as far as you're concerned.
Well,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, she kind of went, well, look, you know, tell me what you eat. And I showed her what I eat. And she was like, you're just eating three, four times the amount you need to eat.
Right.
So she kind of gave me this eating plan. And I went away for 2 months, done it, carried on doing a little bit of training. Didn't change anything in my life. And I lost about 1.5 stone.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is perfect. So it was then when I made the thing between... eating sensible to and trying to, like, you don't have to train like a madman or a mad woman to kind of stay in shape.
How old were you and where was it when you won your first snooker tournament?
I was a professional.
Yeah, no, just the first tournament you ever won.
I was about 10, I think. I won a junior tournament.
Right, where was that?
Ilford.
So did you think when you won that tournament at age of 10, you would be bringing out a cookbook one day?
No.
And then going on live telly and cooking this
morning? I didn't think I'd be doing that 2 years ago. I like to cook. You know, I'm not, you know, I lived on my own for 3 years and my mate was like, well, let's I come around your house, we cooked dinner. I thought, oh, I've never cooked in my life.
Right.
And we used to do it two or three times a week, and he taught me to cook, and he was a brilliant cook, and I just got into it. It was a bit like come dine with me. So it was like making home a home, and I enjoyed it, and I learned, you know, to go from not being able to cook nothing to be able to just cook for myself.
Well, you don't want to dread meal times, you want to look forward to them, especially if you're a foodie, which is why you're overweight in the first place.
Yeah, but I think once you start to change what you eat, after a while your taste buds change and you start to like the food you eat. You know, if you're eating Snickers every day, then, you know, a bit of Greek yogurt with a little bit of honey in probably ain't going to cut it. But if you drop the Snickers for a month, 6 weeks, and you do your own yogurt, a bit of honey, and put a few bits and pieces in there, a few strawberries and berries, after 6 weeks, you go, no, it actually tastes quite nice. You'll be sick of the Snickers because you kind of, it's too much. It's just too much, you know. Yeah, and this Western world, we are just, everything's about too much.
It's too convenient. We're over convenience. We're over comforted.
Yeah, I think so.
And, you know, we have, literally have to run our problems off, don't we? Because our brains can't stop being addicted to basically everything. Mm. I mean, you were quite big at one point, weren't you, Vassos?
Yeah, I mean, I started running. I started running to lose a bit of a gut.
Yeah, well, and then what's the heaviest you've ever been?
So I'm 70 kilos now. I guess I would have been 80.
80.
80,
so
85.
It's not that big, is it, really? But it's big for you now. You couldn't imagine that. Well, you wouldn't want to wake up tomorrow being that weight anymore.
No, it was the running thing for me. And then when you start running, Ronnie, you'll know this.
Mm.
You start wanting to eat healthier.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of virtuous circle, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. But for some people, they don't run, they don't train. And I realised that you don't have to do that. If you eat a good set, balanced diet, you don't have to do all that, and you can still have a good body shape. So that was the full picture for me, whereas before I used to try and out-train a bad diet. And it worked because I trained very hard.
That's a very common thing, isn't it? And then what happens, a lot of people, you know, they sign up for a half marathon or a marathon, it's a big deal in their life, and it's their big challenge, and good for them, you know.
Yeah.
But once they've climbed that particular mountain, they then maybe back off. But in their mind, they're still training, and then they carry on eating like you did, and then it all goes pear-shaped. How heavy did you get to, Ronnie?
One stage I got to about 16 stone.
16 stone.
And then my lightest I got down to was 11 and a half when I was running a lot, but now I'm about 13.
Well, Ronnie, lovely to meet you. Well done. Yeah, congratulations.
Cheers, thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has transformed himself from an insomnia-suffering music industry exec to a centered and peaceful meditation guru. He uses Jimi Hendrix, Massive Attack, and Radiohead as session soundtracks, so you know he's good. Please welcome the mellow master of musical meditation and author of The Effortless Mind, Will Williams.
Morning, Will.
Good morning.
So meditation for you started didn't start in India, but it really stepped up a gear when you went to India with your girlfriend over a decade ago now. Tell us briefly about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So the meditation had helped me overcome the insomnia and all these wonderful things started unfolding. So I just got curious. And we just bought a one-way ticket to India and wandered around, and we were lucky that we met all these amazing masters early on. So then we had like a backstage pass to all the big shots.
And so your meditation, the one that you like, and I know you know lots about lots of them, is Bija meditation, and it's sound meditation.
Yes.
And you can diagnose us with the sound, and then what happens is we internalize that sound for 20 minutes a day in the morning, or 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night, and it will change your life. Now, I'm on board. I'm totally on board. Okay. So how do you diagnose each individual with their bespoke sound? How does that work?
Well, that's what I had to go through 3 years of training to be able to do. But you can do it methodically if you wish, but it's actually much more powerful when you develop the ability to be able to do it intuitively. So I need to spend 1 or 2 minutes with someone and then I know what their sound is. So I'm already figuring yours out, and I think I've got it.
Okay, I love it. So when you say you're figuring it out, what are you feeling? You're feeling my energy? You're looking at my demeanor? You're looking at my body language? What are you feeling? What are you sensing?
All of that can go into the pot. So the feeling layer is the most powerful one, but
right.
I will also be using certain aspects of your mannerisms and your physiological appearance to be able to kind of cross-reference.
Now, I've read your book, as I say. To be honest, I've read half of it, and I'm going to read the other half tonight. And by the way, we could talk up to halfway and then maybe come back again and we could talk about the other half if you
wonderful
like.
That sounds great.
And each chapter is a testament from somebody you have helped, and basically it's a case study. So somebody comes to you with an issue and with doubt or with belief or some, you know, it's from some disposition in between, and they then tell us what they brought to you, what you did for them, and how much it has fixed them. And it's pretty much comprehensively, I mean, it is like an advert for what you do for a living, but that's okay because that's what happens in the life road less travelled and things like that. That's all fine, but you help them in different ways. And so you can help with addiction, you can help with sleeping, you can help here with anger and coping with anxiety and depression and your digestion, because that's so important.
Huge.
And is it a one-fix shop? So this will sort you. So once you have your own sound, once you've told us what our sound is,
yeah.
Then how do you have various singing bowls, or do you have various gongs? How do we hear our sound once you've diagnosed what it is?
Oh, so I transmit it to you verbally.
Oh,
because that way then you can replicate it in your own mind.
This is so good.
So I do the best job I can to replicate these very powerful sounds.
Right.
I whisper it into your ear, and then you just start repeating it in your mind, and then you're off.
I can't get my head around how one sound can do all this for you, but I do believe you. Can you just tell me a bit more about how it works?
So if you are using a sound which resonates with your nervous system in the most optimal way, immediately the whole nervous system starts calming down.
Right.
And the amygdala in your brain, which is the alarm system,
yeah.
calms down. The prefrontal cortex, which is your most valuable bit of kit, starts balancing out in its activation. And from there, all of those problems that stem from you being in this imbalanced state of activation just start melting away, because now you're in balance. It's actually super simple. Rather than dealing with everything at a symptom level, just go straight to the root.
What do we do next on the radio? What am I going to do now? What do we do now? How do we take this further?
Well, I mean, if your audience want a guided meditation, I'm very happy to provide one of those.
But what could you do for us here now, for us three here now?
How long have you got?
No, well, we've got as long or as little as you need or would like. But if we were coming for a consultation, so
that's right. Yeah,
the perfect thing you would do for us would be a three day time window.
Yeah.
But we don't spend all 3 days with you. There'd be 7 hours within those 3 days.
Exactly.
And what happens within those 7 hours?
So the first hour is getting you rocking and rolling with your new sound and get you into this deep place. And then next couple of days is 2 or 3 hours each, helping you understand how to make use of it so that you can actually go out there and smash life.
So how different might be the message, if you like, that you tell me as opposed to the one you might tell Vassos or impart to Rachel?
Well, all three of you would have a different sound, that's for sure.
How different might they be?
These guys are more similar to than yours. Yours is actually very different to these guys.
Oh, no. Is that bad news for me?
No, it's good. You honestly...
That's so unfair.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave, over to you, who's sitting opposite us now, who's about to be live on the radio.
Looking down the CVs of our next guests is like reading a wine menu in a fancy restaurant full of classics, sophistication and class. Now starring in the exceptional new Sky original series Chernobyl, please welcome real acting royalty. It's Emily Watson and Jared Harris.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Welcome,
good morning.
Welcome. How does it feel to be in the best TV show in the world ever?
Well, that's very, very nice of you. Thank you. It feels good. It's a great show.
So we're talking about Chernobyl. It's an astounding thing to watch. What was it like to be in, first of all, Emily?
Well, reading the scripts was an astonishing thing, just you know, apart from anything else before we'd even started. Absolute page-turning horror.
Really?
And a lot of stuff that I, you know, it's a subject that I thought I knew and I didn't. And I didn't know the depth and the depravity of it and the scandal of it. I mean, you've only seen two episodes. There's an awful lot more to be revealed about stuff that's really, really shocking. But it was also an incredible team. Jared was already attached, and Stellan Skarsgård,
you're all brilliant in it.
Fabulous.
He's Stellan Skarsgård plays his character. Did his character really exist? Did that chap really exist in life? Because you're a sort of cornucopia of different characters.
Yes, mine are sort of tribute to a lot of the scientists
which is a very clever thing to do, isn't it? That's a very clever character to come up with in amongst all the people that did actually exist.
The writer has the most amazing brain, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
But Stellan's character, because he's such a nasty baddie when you first meet him. But within one episode, he becomes very vulnerable, doesn't he?
Yeah, he switches.
He does switch. Thanks to your character. So describe your character. Your character also existed.
Yes, I play a real person. His name is Valery Legasov. He was a nuclear physicist, a scientist who was given the job of going down there and figuring out what had happened. And then once they realized that it was the worst case scenario, trying to figure out how to fix the situation.
The attention to detail, the production values are unsurpassed, I think, you know, other than perhaps in sci-fi. And this isn't sci-fi, this is reality. So Pripyat looks like Pripyat. Where was your Pripyat?
We were in Lithuania, and we shot in Vilnius, Lithuania for 5 months, and then we were, was it 2 weeks in the
Kiev.
Ukraine?
Yeah.
In Kiev. And while we were there, Putin was shelling the eastern part of the country. And then we shot for 1 week at a decommissioned nuclear power plant in Ignalina, which is an exact replica. It's the same model, same design as the Chernobyl nuclear power plant.
Okay, so what is the status of Chernobyl now, Jared?
Right now it is under a containment structure that will be good for the next 100 years. Then they'll have to rebuild it. And
what does that structure look like? Is it like a cover, like a massive cloche or something?
It's a giant sarcophagus that they've built over it. It's a sort of in the shape of a it's like a sort of tea cozy.
Right.
Yeah.
it has to be rebuilt in 100 years' time from now because it'll have degraded. The site itself is going to be active. It's going to be spewing out radiation for the next 25,000 years at its most potent level. So
it's over 4,000, whatever it was.
It was 16,000-17,000 Röntgen, was it? Yeah.
Okay. They thought it was 3.7 at first, and it ended up at 16,000.
Yes.
And then in 50,000 years, it will eventually be safe.
Yeah.
Like, but it could have been a whole lot worse.
It could have been a lot worse.
How accurate are those conversations that take place around the communist leaders' table, with President Gorbachev at one end and some various experts on either side?
I know that one of the things that Craig was very concerned with was to be as accurate as possible. Obviously, he has time constraints because it's a 5-hour story, and there's the whole thing, the events take place over a 2-year period. So, they're as accurate as they possibly can be.
So, being in something so good, and you've both been in brilliant things before, of course you have, and there's no need, nor should we even think about comparing this job to other jobs, but what's it like when you're in a job like this? What has the reaction from your friends been in the business, from your peers, from your family? What is it like to be in something that's this good?
I get texts from my sister who lives in the States.
And that's a big deal.
That means it's really good. That means it's good.
We've all got one of those. Remember when I ran my first marathon? My mum phoned me up. She never phoned me up. She phoned me before I got up. She said, "Well done." Right. Just talking about it now makes me well up. It's like, all right, that must have been worth doing then. What about you, Jared?
Haven't heard from the brothers yet. No, my mum is loving it. I saw her last night. You get good responses from friends, and it's basically, from my point of view, you're just hoping that there's a really interesting job comes along within the next couple of weeks. That's really where my mind is. I'm just looking forward to going, what's going to happen next?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.